What had been a rather dry summer in Wisconsin made a complete reversal in 2 weeks at the end of August. With record rainfall, drivers navigated flooded streets, neighbors helped neighbors stack sandbags high around homes and businesses. We watched the rising water and heard the accounts.
Right now at 5, it is flooding like they have never seen before in Dane County.
It's being called a summer's worth of rain in just one day.
Check out Black Earth Creek. It is at its banks along the side of the creek. You can actually see cars getting washed into the creek.
You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about flood management here in Wisconsin. The deadline is Monday for state residents to register for FEMA disaster assistance caused by the historic flooding in August and September. We're exploring lake levels, the water table, and how much control we can exercise over Mother Nature to prevent massive destruction from future floods. Chad Berginnis is executive director of the Association of State Floodplain Managers. The association promotes education and policies that mitigate the impacts of flooding. Chad, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, let's look first here at Madison before we zoom out across the state. When we look at the historic flooding in and around Madison, a lot of finger pointing was at Lake Mendota's level. How much of an impact did this have on the historic flooding?
Lake levels can have an impact on flooding, but I think that probably misses the main narrative of the event that happened in August. The reality is when you get 10 inches of rain, mostly in about a 12-hour period, whether it be directly on the Yahara Lakes, whether it be on Black Earth Creek, or in just urban areas in Madison, lake levels play a very small role in terms of the overall impact of flooding. Now, the subsequent high water the rain event, when the lakes actually rose even more, of course, you did have property owners around the lakes having the effects of that. But again, when you have such a large event, you have to really look at the creeks, the rivers, the stormwater, as well as the lakes.
So there are a lot of other contributing factors, not just lake level. You mentioned runoff in urban development. What impact does runoff have on?
Well, runoff has a huge impact. Actually, our headquarters is right at the intersection of High Point and Mineral Point Road, where we saw a lot of the flooding. And in fact, I think a lot of the television stations were recording that area, Gammon Road. And that was all really stormwater runoff flooding. You know, in a lot of our communities, and Madison's not unique, we have stormwater systems that were developed in the 50s, 60s, 70s, that designs stormwater systems to handle a certain amount of flow. When there's more rain than the flow that they were designed to handle, you have flooding. And the trends that we are seeing today, where we're having more intense rainfall events, a lot of our stormwater systems, in not only in the state, but in the country, are inadequate.
So, and that runoff is going eventually to finding its way to river systems and to watersheds, and we're then seeing the rising water. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, so we, in managing this flood risk, you need to start with the urban runoff, but then you also need to look at your flood management along our rivers and our streams and our creeks in agricultural areas, and then finally further downstream. So it really takes an entire watershed approach to really manage flood risk comprehensively.
Give us some examples of what can happen in that watershed approach of management.
Well, the more progressive communities that we see in the nation really take an approach that starts even at the individual property level. You know, for example, in the city of Milwaukee and with the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, they have a rain barrel program which tries to capture some of that stormwater on site at the source, so you have less water contributing to the runoff. And then you have community and municipal systems that convey water. They need to be sized properly. More of the progressive techniques these days are to not only retain and detain those, but to promote infiltration of water so that you also are having adequate water tables in time of drought. You have agricultural practices such as conservation tillage and things like that that actually can manage runoff even on farm fields. And so, again, it takes each of these approaches is one piece of the puzzle to solve our overall flood risk problem.
Chad Berginnis is with us. He's executive director of the Association of State Floodplain Managers, and we're talking about flood management in the state. Were you impacted by flooding over the summer? What part of the state do you live in, and how did the flooding impact your community? Has your community made substantial changes to the way it handles heavy rains? You can call in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Chad, as we were chatting here earlier, I had said that, you know, before Wisconsin, we'd lived in Louisiana, where for 15 years, where flooding happens. Flooding is almost, and I don't say it lightly, but flooding's a way of life. But coming here and seeing historic flooding and seeing the reactions by people and how they approach flooding seemed very different from what had happened in Louisiana. Can you tell us about some advancements here in Wisconsin?
Sure. You know, and Wisconsin actually does have some of those areas where flooding is a way of life. I was just reading an article recently about Soldiers Grove in Wisconsin, where prior to the effort to relocate part of the village in 1978, flooding was a way of life. It was described exactly how you said. But I think in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin is somewhat unique across the nation, Wisconsin has had progressive policies in place dealing with flood risk management for decades. Wisconsin, for example, with Soldiers Grove, probably had the nation's first attempt at relocating part of a community because of flood risk. In Darlington, Wisconsin, you had one of the nation's first comprehensive floodproofing of a historic downtown so that the businesses learn to live with the water but don't have the damage. So you have flood barriers set up for the individual businesses. The state also has been managing where folks build in relation to the floodplains through shoreline management and zoning, and also has a robust hazard mitigation program that addresses existing at-risk development and either buys them out, elevates them, relocates them, floodproofs them. And so put all those pieces together, and Wisconsin's done a great job of managing flood risk. And so when a big one actually happens, I think folks are really taken by surprise because we aren't used to that kind of flooding, because we have done quite a good job here in the state in managing that risk.
Well, and it's interesting you say that. Do communities in other parts of the state then approach flooding in different ways?
They do. I've been in flood risk management my entire career, and I've never seen two communities that were exactly alike. And each community's flood problems are unique, and the set of solutions to address those is also unique. One thing I've kind of said as a mantra through my career is that you can't address flood risk in a community through one approach. It really does take multiple approaches to do that.
Dane County has taken some recent steps to address flooding. The 2019 budget was approved last month, and it included $5 million for public works projects to address damage done by the August floods. We're talking about flood management, the ways it happens here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been affected by flooding? What part of the state do you live in? And how did the flooding impact your community? How has your community made changes in the way it handles heavy rainfalls? Chad Berginnis stays with us. He heads up the Association of State Floodplain Managers. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Dane County will allocate $3 million to improve water flow in the Yahara River and other so-called pinch points, enabling water to move more quickly out of Dane County's entire chain of lakes during and after heavy rain. It's one piece of the upcoming budget. We're talking about flood management and how communities around Wisconsin can manage water levels after historic rains. Chad Berginnis stays with us. He leads the Association of State Floodplain Managers. That's based here in Wisconsin and based here in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What would you like to see done to address flooding across Wisconsin? Do you have questions about how you and your community can better prepare for rising water in the future? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Chad, we have an email here coming in from Bruce, who'd like to hear your assessment of the impact loss of wetlands in Wisconsin that has had on the intensity and frequency of flooding events.
Sure. Well, wetlands really are our natural buffer when it comes to flooding. In addition to all the other benefits that they provide from water quality and habitat, flood management is actually one of those huge benefits. So while I don't particularly have facts at my fingertips in terms of wetlands loss in Wisconsin, generally speaking, the loss of wetlands usually means that you're going to have more stormwater entering our streams and rivers, and that's going to cause increased losses.
Let's talk for a moment about sandbagging, because oftentimes when we see that historic flooding coming in advance, you see people sandbagging. National Guard gets called up, and everyone helps everyone sandbag around their properties, around their businesses. First of all, is that the first line of defense?
Sandbagging is something that's probably the most common emergency action somebody takes in terms of dealing with imminent flooding and is a first line of defense. However, sandbagging from a technological standpoint is kind of old technology. And one of the things that we try to do at ASFPM is to also promote advancements in technologies that are out there. And so there are alternatives to sandbagging that are more environmentally friendly, that are reusable. And a lot of those products are ones that you can find. We actually have a small program called the National Flood Barrier Testing and Certification Program. And we test and certify these new technology products. And you can find those at nationalfloodbarrier.org. And basically, the reason that we do that is just to make sure they work as advertised. But for example, one of the products that exists out there is a flat system that you can literally unroll around your building, and then the weight of the water actually fills it up, elevates it, and then brings it down after the flood event. You rinse it off, you roll it back up, and you store it.
Wow.
And so that's something that takes a lot less labor. You don't have the environmental hazards of disposing of sandbag waste, and you can reuse it over and over.
And that's on the market right now?
And that's on the market right now, yes.
Have we been seeing businesses and even personal homes take other approaches than sandbagging? Or is this hard? Is it slow to come on?
You know, it seems to be slow to come on, but I think it's also because that they're really... there's no good place for the public to go and find these kinds of resources. And so that's part of the reason we started our testing and certification program, because at the website, for example, you can find all of those products that are tested and certified. And that the testing we do is to a standard. It's an ANSI standard 2510, which is a consensus standard that is being adopted actually by other countries in the world as well. So again, you know, would encourage folks to at least check that out for some alternatives.
How realistic is it? We're seeing communities dedicating millions of dollars to work on repairing what has been damaged and also future mitigation efforts. How can you expect communities to afford big changes to control flooding in the future?
Well, not to be punny, but that's probably the million-dollar question, actually. The costs are going up. From a national trends, here's something that we're seeing. In the 1990s, in the nation, we averaged about $5.5 billion of flooding per year. In the 2000s, that jumped to $10 billion a year. Probably in this decade, by the time it's over with, we're probably going to be approaching $20 billion a year in terms of flood damages. Not only are these affecting budgets locally, but these are going to have a real impact even on our national economy. And so the approaches that we take to flood risk management are things that we need to seriously think about and potentially change. And so, for example, at their very core, flood risk areas are high hazardous areas. And sometimes it may make sense to put our development, our critical infrastructure, outside of the floodplain.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Jeff joining us from Delafield. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My question is in regards to what I'll call modern agricultural practices of tiling more and more of the farm fields. Isn't that kind of equivalent to eliminating a wetland where you're taking away the water's ability to infiltrate and you're just sending it into the streams and rivers, which I would think would increase the probability of flooding downstream? Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for the call.
Yes, actually, it would have a similar impact and perhaps even a broader impact, because a farm field that you're going to tile, you're going to be usually tiling a lot more acreage than you would, let's say, eliminating a wetland. And again, the effect of tiling is to remove the water faster and get it into our streams and our rivers faster. And that concentrates the stormwater. So better approaches would be using things like conservation tillage and no-till, which have been proven to increase water infiltration by a significant amount.
Let's go to Harry now in Madison. Hi, Harry.
Hi. I have a question. Isn't it true that the state enacted laws to overrule strict stormwater retention requirements that were enacted in Dane County? I mean, I think basically Dane County, which is developing rapidly, enacted an ordinance to say that new development, they needed to, the new development would have to not increase the stormwater runoff. And I think the state said that local ordinances could not be stricter than the state law on that.
Harry, thanks so much for the call. What is that interplay between ordinances and how we manage water?
Yeah, so you know, one of the things that is frustrating from a flood risk management standpoint is that when states do enact laws that would prohibit communities who want to be maybe more stringent, be more proactive, for them to do so. Because what we see in the nation is that probably the leading innovations happen at that local level. And so again, when you have actions like that, they're really stifling the innovation that's happening in the community. And that in turn could have a potential of increasing flood risk.
We hear of 100-year flood events. We hear of 500-year flood events. Mm-hmm. Where do the help us understand that terminology?
Well, the basic origin of that terminology is when you say, for instance, a 100-year flood event, it has, on average, an event that happens once every 100 years, or it's a 1% chance any given year. And so it's a way to communicate risk, but it's also not the greatest way to communicate risk. Unfortunately, professionals in the field, like our organization and others, we've been debating this a long time, whether or not we should go to a different way of explaining it. The problem is, how do you explain it in a way that compels people to take action? You know, the folks down in Houston, Texas, and the fallacy of using this language, in Houston, prior to Harvey, suffered a 100-year flood, a 500-year flood, and another 500-year flood the 3 years before Harvey.
Mm. So suddenly that language just doesn't seem relevant anymore and doesn't make an impact, and it perhaps goes in contrast to what the language is.
Well, right.
The definition is.
And especially in the face of another trend that is really altering flood risk in the country, and that's climate change, and specifically the two parts of climate change. One, we don't have to worry about here in Wisconsin, which is sea level rise, but the other is the increase in very heavy precipitation events. When you look at the National Climate Assessment Report that we prepare in the United States every 4 years or so, one of the more interesting graphics is it shows the Midwest, and it basically shows a 37% increase in very heavy precipitation events now versus in the previous period of record. And anecdotally, I'm hearing that from our members all over the country, not only here in Wisconsin, but elsewhere. You know, whereas maybe growing up, folks thought, you know, a good rain is a 1 or 2 inch rain. And these days, when we get rain, we're talking 4, 5, and 6 inches.
Well, Chad, thank you so much for joining us and helping us learn a little bit today about flood management.
Thank you so much for having us. Really appreciate it.
Chad Berginnis is Executive Director of the Association of State Floodplain Managers. The association promotes education and policies that mitigate the impacts of flooding. Up next, it's news. Then we'll speak with Democratic U.S. Representative Mark Pocan about what's ahead for the 116th Congress. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.